Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 6 of Season 5 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast, where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Rennie Harlan-directed and Bruce Willis-starring action film Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Josh Horowitz of 5 Minutes of Bonsai, 5 Minutes of Trouble, 12 Chimes, It's Midnight, a whole bunch of other things. Welcome to the show, Josh.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Rob. Great to be back in the Movies by Minutes chair.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you. It's I've been trying to get you for a number of seasons, and I'm glad that I was finally able to find a movie and some time that was good for you to join in. So thank you.
Yeah, I'm glad you reached out. Yeah, and what a movie to do as well. Die Hard 2, which I hate to say it, but I had never seen this movie.
Ooh, I'm so happy. That's another person. Yeah, that's, I love, getting guests who watch a movie just because I'm doing it. You know, that's great. So I get a first impression. It's something that I will never be able to have again of certain movies, but especially Die Hard 2. You know, I won't be able to experience it once again for the first time. So I love being able to see it from the eyes or through the eyes of somebody who hasn't seen it before. So, oh, wow, we're going to have a fun week because I'm going to want to hear a lot of your interpretation of things. Well, maybe even at the end of the week, we'll talk about like your overall interpretation of everything, even with spoilers about things that are going to go on later and stuff like that. You know,
good.
See like if there are things that you were able to figure out before they happened and stuff like that. But we'll get there. We'll get there.
I'm surprised I'd never had a chance to see this film. I mean, I saw Die Hard. I think I saw it on video. Actually, not in the theaters, because when did that come out?
Well, how old were you in
88 or something?
Yeah, how old were you in 88?
I was 11 years old.
Okay,
and
so that's
most
understandable
of my
why
movie
you wouldn't
experiences
have seen it.
Was all through just VHS. You know, we'd go to the warehouse and we'd rent whatever films happened to be big at the time. And I think I saw that one, but yeah, never got around to seeing Die Hard 2.
Right, and so I'm slightly older than you. I was 14 when the original Die Hard came out, and I didn't see it in the theater either. I saw me and a friend of mine rented it on video, and we were watching it at his house. And his parents didn't approve of watching R-rated movies. So, and they were in the house while we were watching it. So every time they would come into the room, we would have to quickly switch a channel. So it was a very interesting way to watch the movie for the first time. Die Hard 2, I actually saw in the theater. I went to a special preview the night before it premiered on July 4th, 1990, and then I saw it again the following morning at the first show. So this is one of two movies that I've seen in the theater on back-to-back days. This and Jurassic Park, when that came out a few years later.
Great films. Yeah, yes. Now the early 90s, it was a time for quite a good number of these action-filled movies.
Yes, that's very true. That's very true. So episode 6 begins with McClane trying to get a little romantic and ends with McClane excusing himself. So we ended things on Friday with, John calling a non-existent number because, you know, as Rennie Harlan says on the commentary and also, most of us know, at that time you couldn't call an airphone.
Oh, that's right. He's calling her.
Yes, he calls her back.
I didn't consider that. Yeah,
yes.
No kidding.
So he's somehow calling a non-existent number. I don't know how that works today, if you can actually call an airphone, because, like, how would you know the number?
It's actually interesting with these airphones. I was surprised that, to even see that. I mean, here we've got two technologies that are being displayed here. We've got very, very old stuff, really. We've got a payphone, which you barely see anymore.
That's right.
And you have an airphone, which does exist, but again, you rarely see these things.
Yes.
I don't think you can call them. That would be a little strange if suddenly something like that rang. I mean, hell, even if you're on a regular air flight, if suddenly someone's cell phone goes off, I think that would probably freak people out.
Yeah, that's true also. Well, especially now because they keep telling everyone that that's going to, mess up the instruments on the plane and the plane's going to crash because of it, So, yeah. But, I mean, even if you think about, 22 years ago with 9/11, the fact that people were calling from airphones, that's, I think, when people heard all the stories of what happened that day where people were using the airphones, I think that was one of the first times where people were where earphones became very popular, I guess you can say. I don't know if that's the right term to use, you know, for a tragic day like that. But, you know, that was a day. But you never heard of people calling them back. You know,
yeah, well,
they didn't say, oh,
that's for
I,
sure.
you know, I missed the call. I'm going to try and call someone back. There was just no number there. You know, so
and if it does ring, do you have to pay for the call?
That's right.
Because normally you have to put your credit card in, right?
That's right. But also back then, you know, people were paying for incoming calls also. You know, I mean, I don't know what it's like by you nowadays, but most places that I know, you don't pay for incoming calls. You just pay for the outgoing calls, from what I know.
Yeah.
At least here, here in Israel.
I don't even remember. I mean, there was a time, of course, where everybody had to sign up for long distance service on their landlines.
Correct.
And I remember always saying, like, you know, if you get a call or sometimes, then that you don't have to pay for. But if you make an outgoing call, you do.
Right.
You know, with cell phones now, it's all a thing of the past. But still, if I get like some unknown call that it says from China, I don't pick it up just
right.
in case
exactly.
I'm going to get charged for.
For sure. For sure. I mean, I've told this story before. Even maybe last week, I don't even remember that when I was in high school. So I was living in Detroit. So I had a friend in school who was living in Windsor, right across the border in Canada. And I would call him at night, you know, and we would talk for hours and stuff like that. And after a few months, my parents got really upset at me because I was making international phone calls. Mm. You know, I was like ringing up their bills and I'm just talking to a friend. I wasn't even thinking about that at the time. You know,
well,
so.
Rob, here's a question for you. Have you ever used an airphone on a flight?
Nope, never used it.
No, neither
and
have
never,
I.
It's
always...
never rung. It's never rung when I'm on the phone either.
It never
when
rings,
I'm there.
No. I mean, I just remember... You know, the times where I'd be on a flight and I saw the phone, and I was almost like joking, like, oh, I'll pick it up. But I kind of knew in the back of my mind, no, super expensive. And I did some research on the Airphone. Would you like to hear about the Airphone?
Of course I do. Go ahead.
So here we go. So, okay, I looked this up. There was a New York Times article that was written in 1984 that mentioned how callers would insert their credit card in a console. They were allowed up to 45 minutes on their call.
Wow.
And it was $7.50 for the first 3 minutes and then $1.25 for each additional minute. This was
That's still a hell of a lot of money for a 45-minute call.
And they noted that this was about the same cost as a long-distance call to Japan at that time.
Wow.
And then I was doing a little more research. It said that apparently airphones kind of started dying out by around 2004. Apparently only 2 to 3 people would use the service per flight. And now it's basically gone. It's obsolete because the flights have in-flight Wi-Fi.
That's
and
right.
If you wanted to, you could use a Skype call, just
right,
like
but,
we're doing now.
That's right. But Wi-Fi is also very expensive on the plane. You know, it's not very cheap.
Yeah, it's some are more than others. I remember taking a JetBlue flight actually to New York at one point, and it was included. It was free.
Oh wow,
so
that
was kind of cool.
Yeah. No, I was on a flight to the States, you know, from Israel last summer. And I was debating whether I should pay. I don't even remember what it was. Maybe it was even $25 or $35. But it was like, do I really need it? You know, is it worth? Do I really need the Wi-Fi? And in the end, I didn't. You know,
mm-hmm.
I was able to do everything, you know, without the Wi-Fi. Whatever I needed to do on my computer the whole time. So whatever.
Yeah.
So John started by, you know, sort of, or he ended Friday by lying to his wife about, you know, Holly asked him if he had any trouble taking, you know, borrowing her mother's car. And he said, not yet. And then he quickly, this minute begins with him quickly changing the subject. And he goes, listen, honey, when you land, can we just like, you know, rent a car, check into a hotel, leave the kids with your parents, order some room service, bottle of champagne. What do you say? So, first of all,
it seems like he's on a much better relationship with his wife in this movie, isn't it?
Yes, for sure, for sure. Well, they've patched things up. He's moved to L.A., so you know
he's right.
But I mean, think of
L.A. cop too, right?
That's right. And you know, first of all, the idea that he's trying to deflect the whole fact that he's getting that he got a ticket. Okay, his wife is eventually going to find out. You know, this isn't something he's going to be able to hide. So, but part of the whole thing, think about what he's asking. He says to her, says, let's rent a car. Wouldn't her first reaction be, why do you need to rent a car? We have my mother's car, you know, and then, okay, check into hotel. I can understand that there, you know, I did a little bit of research. There are a whole bunch of hotels, you know, right around the Dulles Airport, at least today. They're pretty expensive. What I don't know if he's, because he says hotel, he doesn't say motel. You know, I'm sure he can get a good price on a motel in 1990, but I don't know if that's what he's looking for if he wants a romantic evening with his wife. You know, but most of the hotels in around the airport are nowadays they're about $120, $130 a night. I
Wow.
don't, I wasn't able to find out what the prices were back then because, you know, they don't keep that stuff written down. But you know, like, okay, so he says he wants to rent a car, and then he says, why don't we leave the kids with your parents? Aren't they already there? You know,
Yeah, well, the
it's
whole
like,
reason that this is taking place in Dallas, though, is because what he's just visiting
he's visiting his
relatives,
in-laws.
right?
They're visiting his in-laws, yeah. But again, the kids are already at her parents. So why say leave the kids with your parents? Meaning they were going to take them somewhere else?
And why are they on separate flights too?
No, that
Is that
actually
ever
makes sense.
explained?
That sort of, it's not really explained, but it makes sense. The fact that you know, he shows up a day or two late earlier with the kids, and she had to continue working. I mean, later on, we'll find out that you know, that she has been promoted, you know, in Nakatomi because her two immediate bosses were killed, you know, a year or two ago, depending on when, you know, when these movies really take place. So whatever. So again, I just find it very funny, you know, thinking about it from the perspective of a married man. And, you know, I'm assuming you have the same idea. You know, if you deflect a certain thing that you don't want your wife to find out about, you know, because you want a romantic evening, she's going to eventually find out and you're going to get in hot water anyway. So I don't know.
It's an interesting thought. Yeah, I just had a thought right now. You had mentioned before Jurassic Park, and I was just thinking in this case, one of the big things in Jurassic Park is that it involves children
Yes.
that are in jeopardy from all of, the dinosaurs and stuff. And here we're saying that John ended up coming early and bringing the kids and dropping them off. Well, what if for some reason this was a movie where the kids were with him
That's right.
and hadn't gone to the mother-in-law's? They were all going to say hello to the mom, and then all this stuff happens. This,
Very
now you would
interesting.
have it a much sort of more threatening, edgier film. They probably would have far fewer F-bombs, I think, in the film if that had been the case. But yeah, taking a Jurassic Park approach with kids in jeopardy and all this other stuff, that would have been an interesting take.
Yeah, that's true. Wow. I didn't even think about that fact. I mean, we do get to eventually see the kids in future movies. I don't know. I mean, I know that you've never seen Die Hard 2, but have you seen 3, 4, or 5?
Nope.
Okay, so you know, when I get you back for those seasons, then you'll hopefully get a chance to see what happens in those. But in 4, his daughter is in it, and in 5, his son is in it. So
Ah. Yeah, so much time passes,
yes. Well, you know, what do you expect?
Yeah.
What do you expect from Bruce Willis? So
Oh, I have
basically,
another note here before we
yeah,
move on
sure.
to stuff. I mean, he's on a payphone.
Yes.
And just like I asked you about, when last time you used an airphone, when was the last time you used a payphone?
Ooh, that's been a long time also because I've had a cell phone for over 20 years. So it's, you know, so my assumption is it's been over 25 years since I've used a
Yeah.
payphone.
Probably the same with me. Yeah, at least 20 years.
I
I
don't
mean,
think I've ever
with
had
cell
the
phones, why do you need
opportunity.
them?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, well, I
And
mean,
then,
the question is how easy is it to find a cell phone these days?
or a payphone.
Payphone,
I
sorry,
mean,
a payphone.
I've
Sorry. How
been.
easy is it?
I mean,
It's
I
easy to find a cell
you
phone, isn't
see,
it?
you kind of see like the empty husks of what used to be, lots and lots of payphones around. I mean,
Yes.
I've been very hard pressed to find one or two. I live in L.A. I was looking this one up. Wikipedia was saying that as of 2018, there were only 100,000 payphones left in the U.S., with 20,000 of them in New York. And then in
Wow.
2022, New York City removed its last payphone.
Wow.
So they're a dying breed.
Yes. Stay away from payphones, I guess. Because again, people don't need them. It's rare.
Yeah, but well, the one of the things that I do miss, and this is going to come up in a later minute, is the enclosed payphones,
Yes.
where you could actually go in there and have a little bit of soundproof privacy. That I
And
miss.
change into your
Into your
superhero outfit.
Superman outfit, of course.
That's right. It's true. That makes sense. And then Holly's response to John is, "You're on, Lieutenant." So the thing that we get from that is, you know, just by her response, we now that know that he moved to LA and was, you know, he
promoted.
He's promoted. He's now a lieutenant because, you know, back in the first movie, he was just a detective. He wasn't even he wasn't a captain. He wasn't you know, he was just an officer. So he's jumped pretty quickly up the ladder. I guess in LA, you know, the type of work that he does deserves you know, becoming a lieutenant, I guess.
Yeah, and high profile. You know, he's going to talk about how he's seen on TV. People know his face.
That's right. That's right. And so then the shot shifts to we see Holly on the plane, and then you know, he says to her, "I'll see you in about half an hour, honey." And then he says, "I love you. Bye." Yeah. And then the nosy lady sitting next to Holly decides to interject a little bit. You know, and Holly, first of all, Holly has this great smile on her face, you know, as she's hanging up, which is great, you know, because it does show that they have patched up their issues, you know, that they had in the first movie.
And she obviously missed the line about the rental car.
Apparently. She heard hotel, no kids, room service, champagne. Mm-hmm. All right, I'm there. Yeah. We'll just use my mother's car to get there. Yeah, that type of thing. So then the nosy lady sitting next to her, who's played by an actress named Jean Bates, who was born in 1918 and passed away in 2007 from breast cancer, which is really surprising that, you know, she died at the age of 89. So she got breast cancer in her 80s, which is, you know, she has 158 IMDb credits.
Oh, wow. Working actress.
Yeah, seriously. She was a Billboard and a magazine model in like the 1930s and 1940s, which if you look at her, you would not think of her as a model. She doesn't look like it now. And she was also living in the famous motion picture and television Woodland Hills Hospital country house. You know, it's where a lot of actors go and retire. It's like an actor retirement.
I know about that. Yeah, the Motion Picture Television Foundation. Yeah, they have a home for you know, essentially retired actors and actresses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Who I guess are just acting the whole time that they're sick, right? they make the orderlies and nurses there work for their money.
Right.
And then so she interjects. She's apparently, you know, eavesdropping on this conversation. And then she turns to her and says, "Isn't technology wonderful?" And then Holly goes, "My husband doesn't think so." "Well, I do. I used to carry around those awful mace things. Now." And then she, like, opens up her bag as she's saying. She says, "I zap any bastard that screws with me. I tried it on my little dog. Poor thing limped for a week."
But do you notice what she pulls out before she pulls out that taser?
Yes, I did.
Yes, armed, okay. Dangerous, and all yours.
That's right. And that is an ad within, I guess, the In-Flight magazine for Lethal Weapon 2.
I can't remember another movie that would actually advertise a rival movie.
Well, no, it's not really a rival movie because they're both Joel Silver movies.
And
there are, when I did Die Hard, the question came up numerous times whether these two franchises take place in the same universe or not.
Oh,
you know, and the fact that you have an actor that appears in both of them was a little bit of a, you know, at first we said maybe that means that it's not the same universe. But then if you think about it, you know, you can say, okay, maybe they were twin brothers.
Which actor?
Do you know which
about?
Actor?
No.
Al Leong appears.
Al Leong.
Al Leong appears in
he
both.
Was in. Oh, and, well, you know what movie Al Leong is also in.
I know.
Yes.
Big Trouble in Little China.
That's right. Yeah, with his mustache.
So in Lethal Weapon, he played a character named Endo. In Die Hard, he played a character named Uli. And do you remember this character name in Big Trouble in Little China?
Well, he was a Wing Kong.
There you go. He was the Wing Kong Hatchet Man.
He was like a Wing Kong Hatchet Man, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, along with Gerald. I had a chance to meet both of those actors. Gerald Akamura was the guy with the golden guns. But yeah, Al Leong is the...
you've met Al Leong?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I was at a screening at one time for Big Trouble in Little China over at I think it was like a Japanese-American museum. And they had a whole bunch of different cast members that were there. And yes, I had a chance to meet him. I mean, at the time, I mean, he's gotten older. He's a little more frail than he used to be, but
yeah,
you know, still the same guy.
Wow, that's really cool. That is very cool. I mean, he's 70. He's 70.
Yeah.
Yeah, he turned 70 back in September. Mm-hmm. So yeah. So the theory is that they're triplets. There you go.
Triplets.
That's the only way that you can make it seem as if they all live in the same universe, because, you know, in Die Hard he dies, in mm-hmm. Lethal Weapon he dies, and what happens to him in Big Trouble in Little China? I don't remember. You would remember. Does he survive?
He gets taken down too. There you go. Wing Kong.
So there you go. All three brothers. Maybe there's a fourth one somewhere, or maybe they're clones.
Clones. You know,
there you go.
Oh boy.
Yes. So, I mean, Lethal Weapon 2 came out a year before this movie came out. So it came out in the summer of 1989.
Mm-hmm.
Came out on July 7th, 1989. So and trying to figure out when this movie takes place, okay, we figured out that it's probably 1989. You know, like this, the end of December 1989, we weren't sure. I mean, we tried discussing this last week, trying to figure it out. We're not sure how many days before Christmas this was. Christmas Eve that year was on a Sunday night, so it's possible that this is maybe Friday, or maybe maybe it's Thursday. You know, somewhere in there. Which means that this is 6 months after Lethal Weapon 2 came out. So the assumption is that it was already playing. You know, maybe that was one of the in-flight movies that they were showing on the flight from LA to Dulles.
Well, the magazine presence would disprove the theory that they're in the same universe, because
he's watching it
in this universe.
Right. That's very true. You know, I didn't even think about that. Max, you're right.
There you go.
You're very right. Well, maybe it's just like an ad for something that's happening across town in LA. I don't know. Who knows? Who knows? But I think you got me on that one. You've been able to disprove it. Thank you. There you go. So disregard everything I said before. So she mentions
on a flight.
That's right.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, but come on. We both know that most people will not catch that. I didn't catch it until I did my research for this. You know, and I've seen this movie dozens of times. You know.
Yeah. Well, I looked this one up, and you can actually take tasers with you on flights. You just can't carry it in your checked or you can't carry it in your carry-on luggage. You can check it in checked luggage.
Wait, that's now. The question is if pre-9/11 you were allowed to.
You were able to do a lot of stuff back then.
Well, come on. I think it was Swiss Air was still selling, like a month after 9/11, they were still selling,
the army knives?
The Japanese, what were they called? Japanese knives? You know, box cutters or whatever they're called.
Oh,
you know, what the terrorists used. They were still selling them on their in-flight magazine.
Yeah. I think it would have been possible, maybe. I mean, it was a different era.
Yes, correct. So first of all, she mentions Mace. Okay. Now I didn't know this. Mace is actually a brand name, but it has become the generic trademark name. For what it is, okay,
like Xerox and Kleenex.
Exactly. So Mace is actually a self-defense spray that was invented by a man named Alan Lee Littman in the 1960s. Mm. Okay, it basically uses phenacyl chloride and tear gas that dissolves into hydrocarbon solvents and is put into a small aerosol spray can, and it is strong enough to act as a deterrent and incapacitant when sprayed in the face.
Lovely.
Okay. The reason that this was, the reason that he created it was, it was created by this guy, Alan Lee Lippman, and his wife, Doris Lippman, after one of her friends was robbed in Pittsburgh. And they decided to try to, you know, create some sort of deterrent of how to stop people from doing it. So, like I said, the, you know, people, any type of, I guess, pepper spray or whatever you use is going to be called mace. You know, it's commonly used as the, it doesn't matter what the composition is of the product that you're spraying in someone's face. And you will say that someone was maced. And yeah. there's also a spice called mace, which is not connected to this at all.
It okay. seems though, if I hear that term, it just seems little old timey to me. You know, I hear probably more
people will say pepper spray,
like pepper
now.
Spray, for instance. Yeah.
Okay, but pepper spray is still the same thing, it has the same effect. That's the point. Obviously, it is a different chemical composition. Okay, so then when she takes out of her bag, now do you think that's a taser or do you think that's something else?
I mean, it's like a taser zap something or other. I mean, it's like, like one of those cattle prod type things, I guess.
Exactly. So I looked up taser and I did research on taser, which I found some really interesting things about a taser, but it turns out this is not a taser. Okay. Because a taser has, barbed darts that puncture the skin. They shoot it out and they usually go out at about 55 miles an hour, which is, 55 miles per second. Which is 125 miles per hour when it hits things. And the range is anywhere between 15 feet for non-law enforcement tasers to 34 feet for law enforcement ones. Wow. So they have a copper wire that delivers a modulated electronic current designed to disrupt voluntary control of muscles, causing neuromuscular incapacitation.
Yep, down you
go. That's right. They are considered less lethal weapons, but they still have a possibility of serious injury or death. And apparently in 2018, there were 49 people who died in the U.S. by being shocked by police with a taser. Mm. The first taser was actually introduced only in 1993 for police to be able to use to subdue fleeing, belligerent, or potentially dangerous people. As of 2010, there were 15,000 law enforcement and military agencies around the world that used tasers as part of their use of force continuum.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
But if this isn't a taser, so what is
okay,
it technically?
Okay,
we're going to
get there.
Prod?
It is – okay. So I have 5 pages of research about tasers until I realized it wasn't a taser. So that's all I'm going to say about tasers. Then there's what's known as an electroshock weapon, and that's what this is. Okay, it is an incapacitating weapon. It delivers an electric shock aimed at temporarily disrupting muscle functions and/or inflicting pain without usually causing significant injury. Okay, this was actually created in 1935.
Oh wow.
Okay, a man named Cyril Diaz in Cuba designed an electroshock glove. To be used, and the glove delivered 1,500 volts of electricity in order to try and stop someone. Then in 1969, a man named Jack Cover, who was a researcher at NASA, developed the taser. Okay, now, do you know, I never knew this, taser actually is an acronym.
Well, I know laser is an acronym, so...
Okay.
What is taser?
Okay. So it's his childhood hero. Jack Cover's childhood hero was Tom Swift. So it is a Thomas A. Swift's electric rifle.
But what does it have to do with Tom Swift?
I have no idea.
he just liked it.
Absolutely no idea. No idea. So they're similar. They're sometimes called stun guns.
Right.
They're a relative of the cattle prod, which you mentioned earlier. The cattle prod has been around for much longer. You know, the cattle prod has been around for over 100 years. There are fabric that people wear that is considered a countermeasure that will stop, you know, that will make it that you won't get shocked if you get hit with that.
I would assume it'd be some sort of like a rubber shirt.
Well, you know what it's
counter
called?
The electricity or something.
You're gonna love what this is called. It's called the Thor Shield.
Oh, Thor. Nice.
Yes. They have stun belts. Okay. It's a belt that's fastened around the subject's waist, leg, or arm and carries a battery and a control pack. I mean, that you see a lot of times in movies, you know, where they're shocking someone that way. I guess it's more of a torture thing by using that. Okay, you have also a stun shield, which are shields that have electrodes embedded into the face. And they used to use them for animal control, but now they use them for riot control, that if you touch them, you know, you get shocked, that type of thing. They even have tasers
shockers, right?
That they have shockers that you can shoot out of a 12-gauge shotgun. In order that it goes 98 feet. I mean, that's just crazy.
Wow.
That's just
I have a note about this particular one here. I mean, the fact that they're even showing it here, you know, according to the laws of Chekhov's gun, you know, that means it has to be used later. So we're definitely going to see this again. Otherwise, why show it?
So it's Chekhov's cattle prod, electric cattle prod.
Chekhov's cattle prod. There you go. The other note I have is that the electricity that you see in it, this reminds me of Big Trouble in Little China. Egg Shen's hand lightning effect at the beginning of the movie.
Okay, that makes sense.
It just reminded me of this. And from what I'd heard about that one, everything that was electrical on screen was all hand animated.
Wow.
And so I suspect it's probably the same thing here where, you know, this is all some
it's
some
very possible
animation.
I mean, on the commentary, Rennie Harlan gives a lot of information, but he doesn't talk about that. You know, he's at this point in the movie, he's apologizing profusely about, you know, his mistake of using earphones.
Yeah.
So, the one other thing I wanted to say about the electroshock device is that in 1991, with the whole case of Rodney King, apparently they tried to subdue him with a taser. And he was shocked twice with it, but it didn't do anything to him. So they assumed that he was on PCP, and that's how things started getting even, you know, more out of control, because that misconception of what happened. Again, I'm not condoning anything; I'm just stating the fact.
Interesting.
Yeah. And, you know, at this point, Holly is had enough of, you know, she's feeling very uncomfortable being shown this taser. You know, the question is she feeling, or sorry, this electro, what do we call
cattle
it?
Cattle prod.
Cattle prod, right. So, I mean, she's feeling very uncomfortable about it. And the question is she feeling uncomfortable that she might get shocked? Is she feeling uncomfortable that she's sitting next to somebody who actually has one in her purse on a plane?
She's just shocked to see that she has it.
There you go. She definitely was shocked. Very good. And then the shot changes, and we're back in Dulles.
Yes.
And we quickly get to see John as he's, you know, strolling around, trying to just walk through the through the airport, trying to figure out what he's going to do with himself for the next half hour that he now has to wait for Holly to show up. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty much his biggest issue right now. I talked about this last week, but I'm still really confused as to, you know, what he's doing, why he showed up so early. You know, I remember back then you could call up like a phone number and find out, when a plane is supposed to land. And you get a somewhat of an idea, you know, it would tell you, okay, departures are going to happen soon, you know, or the,
he parked in like an emergency zone. Usually you only do that if you're really late, but here he's early. So
that's right. Or if you're just running in for a second, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever. I mean, I pointed out last week that it's pretty funny that where he parks, you know, he's parking at the departures, not the arrivals. So theoretically, isn't he supposed to be picking her up? So if anything, he should have been parking at a different place, but whatever. That's the way the movie works. So as he's walking, we then see a shot of our villain, Colonel Stewart,
Yes.
also walking, and they
I
end
couldn't
up.
recognize him. He's actually wearing clothes.
Yes, that's true, and not doing Tai Chi. And then the two of them bump into each other,
Yes.
and John then shows how
Literally.
polite he can be, and just says, "Excuse me." Now,
And this whole section looks like it was pretty heavily dubbed.
yeah,
I couldn't even
it's
tell who
very
was saying
possible.
excuse me just because the lips are kind
Ah,
of
okay.
weird moving.
All right, that's fair. I can understand that. And that's all I have to say about this minute. Do you have anything else you want to say about the minute before we get into the script?
Well, as you go through this movie, obviously there's going to be echoes to the past movie. And
Yes.
this one seems pretty clear. I mean, this echoes to the meeting where John saw Hans Gruber in the last one. And just like that one, he didn't immediately recognize that that's the bad guy.
Correct.
So
But
one
in
of
all
the
fairness, in
many
that one,
echoes.
that was much further in the movie, so he had already interacted with Gruber. Here, he hasn't interacted with him. One of the things that Rennie Harlan says on the commentary is that the reason that he wanted this scene to be in here was, you can't wait until the very end of the movie for the two of them to actually meet.
Ah,
You can, but
just wanted to have that shared moment early
correct.
on. Yes.
Correct. Right. So, you have anything else you want to say before we get into the script?
No, let's dig in.
Okay. All right. So the script is pretty much the same here, but there's some dialogue changes. Basically, when John tells Holly his plan, so it's worded very differently in the script. It says, she asked him yesterday on Friday, did mom give you any trouble about borrowing your new car? And his response is, no, not yet. How about if, when you land, we don't drive over the river and through the woods to grandma's house, but check into the airport motel? And then she says, you're on, Lieutenant. So I like the way they do in the movie much better.
Yeah.
Even though we picked it
I
apart.
remember reading somewhere that apparently Bruce Willis was given a green light to do lots of ad-libbing in this one just because it sort of went over very well in the first one. So it'll be interesting to see just how much he deviates from the original script.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, this is the shooting script from November, and they filmed between November and May, November of 89 and May 90. So,
Yeah, it's going to be pretty close.
yeah, exactly. All right. So every Monday we have a segment called McLean Monday, where my guests will give their top five Bruce Willis movies.
Oh
So,
boy.
what have you got for us, Josh? Start with number five and work your way up.
Oh, we have to go backwards. Okay.
Well, why
Well,
give away your number one right away?
yes, no kidding. Some of these movies that I have on here, it's been a while since I've seen them. But I'll put it on the list because I do remember it. I would say number five would be The Sixth Sense. Very, very long time ago that I saw this one. I remember that he had a very good rapport with the kid in that movie. Of course, it felt very different from some of his more action-related stuff that comes in the other ones. But it was a memorable performance from him, and I think it was something that sort of helped him be more relevant later on. That was like later 90s, was it?
That was 1999.
Yeah, it's because he most of the stuff that was like sort of common Bruce Willis films were from the late 80s, early 90s, but this he was being more relevant in a role like this, and so I would say Sixth Sense. Next one would probably be Pulp Fiction. That was one where I was surprised to see that he was in it because it wasn't really hyped that much that he had a role, or if it was, I just didn't know about it. And seeing him as that boxer who's on the run and kind of goes in and out of the main story and stuff, that was entertaining to see. It was another one where it kind of felt like, oh yeah, Bruce Willis, what's he been doing lately? But I thought that was cool to see him in that one. Third one, 12 Monkeys, I would say. That was a very different type of role for him, I felt. Where he was in sort of like a sci-fi setting, sort of man out of time. You know, is he crazy? Is he not? All this stuff happening to him. Good rapport with the other, the actress in that one. I forget who it was.
It was Madeline Stowe. Madeline Stowe.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that one. Number two, The Fifth Element. That one was just fun because it's action Bruce. It's one-liners galore. Just he plays himself. It's a fun character. He's surrounded by a lot of other sort of crazy fun characters throughout. You know, just overall entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
But my number one, I have to say, and considering I just watched it again recently, it sort of justifies it, is Die Hard 1. You know, he does great in that one. You know, not your typical action star. I read a little bit more about just the idea of casting him in this, the first Die Hard, that he was more known as a comic actor. He was in Moonlighting, television
show.
And then
Blind Date.
Blind Date. And to put him in this one where he's sort of like the unlikely action star, and he's not Rambo. You know, he is hurting throughout that movie. He's bleeding. He's got no shoes on. You don't know if he's necessarily going to make it. And it's a much more type of film where you're really rooting for him. And he's likable, very much so. So that is my top five.
All right, great. Thank you very much for that. So, Josh, you want to tell people where they can find Josh Horowitz?
Where you can find Josh Horowitz? Well, I do have a website, joshhorowitz.com, if you want to hear some of the stuff that I've done, different movies by minutes, podcasts. I'm also an audiobook narrator, and I've had a chance to narrate over 24 audiobooks. The most recent one that I did is called The Dragonstorm Gates by Anthony DiPaolo. This was released in August of 2022. It's a 22-hour epic journey. It's the longest audiobook narration I've done to date.
Wow.
And if you want to hear a story that's a cross between Indiana Jones and The Exorcist, you got to pick this one up. You can find that one on audible.com if you look up The Dragonstorm Gates, or you look me up, Josh Horowitz. Other things that I've done in the past were 5 Minutes of Trouble, the Big Trouble Little China Movies by Minutes podcast, and 5 Minutes of Banzai, which is where we did The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai Across the Eighth Dimension, also in a 5-minute format with my fellow host, Brett Stillo. So
yes,
you can check those
friend of
out.
The show. Brett's been on 2 seasons already, and he will hopefully be back this season.
Yeah, Brett's great. Very, very much into movies and has some great things to say.
Isn't that why we're all here?
Yeah. The last one I'll talk about is 12 Chimes, It's Midnight. It's an old-time radio podcast. I've worked on that one also with Brett. It's led by the talented Amy Pavi, where we do original stories that are all very spooky, among other things. So check that out at 12chimesradio.com.
Ooh, very cool. All right. And while you're doing that, you can go rate, review, and subscribe to any podcatcher you might be using to listen to the show. Finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, and you can find me on my website, movierobminutes.com. So, until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages, near